and then cars and cash registers. I almost never got caught. If there was someone there, I would make them swear not to tell anyone, otherwise I'd come back and hurt them. I made them promise. My mom and dad divorced around the time I turned 17. They never had another kid after me. I was their only one, and I was an embarrassment. I think they didn't want another one because of me. Why would you? Why would you want a chance having something like me again? They couldn't agree on what to do with me or how to fix me, so they just fixed themselves and called it quits. Quits meant they could finally take breaks from having to collectively raise me. That's the fucking truth that divorced parents and fuck-ups don't want you to know about. Mom could have a week off while dad had me, and then vice versa. I knew this is how they felt. Relieved. They didn't need to say it for me to understand that the end of their marriage meant the beginning of happier, separate lives for both of them. Just because they made one mistake didn't mean they needed to spend the rest of their lives taking care of that mistake together. So, my anger grew stronger. My sadness. My demons went from renting to owning. I gave in. Don't cry. I'm not gonna hurt you. I just want us to have fun. I'll be very gentle. When I was 18, I attempted my first bank robbery. It was a really small local bank, but got away with it. At least for a few hours. Because I had no priors and no weapon during the robbery, they gave me 2 years in state prison plus parole. My mom came to the sentencing. She looked hollow. She looked defeated. And my dad never showed. I think I disappointed him most of all, you know. He was the saddest of all. I liked prison the first time I went. Felt safe there. And I was around other people who got me. We were all angry. We had all made one kind of promise or another to someone or something at some point. Promise that got us here. That led us to this point. This place of no return. In prison, I got my first tattoo on my arm. I got a tattoo of my favorite model car when I was a kid. Curtis Turner's 1956 Purple Hog NASCAR Ford. See, I know a lot about cars, especially racers. But more than the cars themselves, I know a lot about the men who raced them. I love Curtis Turner model cars because I loved Curtis Turner. He was the only driver to win 2 Grand National races in a row. The first driver to qualify for NASCAR with a speed of over 180 miles per hour. The dude got the chance to work with the king of all mechanics, Smokey Unick. The dude dreamed up, then built, the Charlotte Motor Speedway. He was everything. Most of all, though, he was a comeback kid. Turner spent a lifetime trying to get more money and rights for drivers and formed a new labor union to support and protect them. The head of NASCAR at that time was a blood-hungry piece of shit who banned Turner and other drivers from NASCAR for life, for unionizing. And my boy went bankrupt, became a drunk, went dark, and set up shop. But half a decade later, they lifted the ban and he was able to race again and he had a major comeback until his plane crashed in 1970. He was in his 40s, I think. Yeah, crashed right here in Pennsylvania, about an hour and a half from where I sit right now in the cell. Over the next 2 years in jail, I got a lot of cars inked on me. 1982 DeLorean DMC, 1962 Volvo P1800, Ferrari from the 70s, Pontiac Firebird Trans Am. I was gonna get them all colored up and nice looking when I got out, right after I got a job and a place to live. That's what I was gonna treat myself to, but never really made it that far. Got out of jail on my 20th birthday. I needed something to sell so I could make some money so I could get back on my feet. It's hard to get work with a record, you know. So I broke into a house. I just wanted to grab some jewelry or something. I wasn't looking for trouble. I didn't know anyone was home. Started going through some drawers, and this woman comes up behind me and attacks me, starts hitting me and all that. But man, she was small, and I wasn't. I'd been lifting weights in prison. Anger got the best of me, you know? Those demons, that promise. I threw her across the room. She hit the wall and fell to the ground. I looked at her lying there in a nightgown. She was just a normal woman. She had brown hair and brown eyes. She wasn't pretty. She wasn't ugly. She wasn't really old, but she wasn't young either. She was just a normal woman. "Do you know who I am?" I asked her. "No," she cried. "Good," I said. I'm not proud of what I done. What I did to her. Throwing her on the bed and doing those things to her. I didn't mean for her to die. I swear to you, I just snapped. I don't know what came over me. I was on top of her and her face. I couldn't shake the promise. I couldn't unsee the nightmare. I felt like she was laughing at me, even though she was crying at me. I put my hands around her neck, remembered the bathroom, those hands on me, and I just lost it. I squeezed as hard as I could until all the sadness was out, until all the grief wasn't there anymore. And when I was done, so was she. I pleaded guilty to murder, guilty to aggravated assault, guilty to robbery, to breaking and entering, to being a failure, bad son, a piece of shit, a monster, a criminal. I pleaded guilty to keeping that promise. And I got life without parole. Last month I asked my cellmate Ronnie to put some new ink on my neck. For the last 2 years I've been in here, I've thought a lot about what I've done and what was done to me. I'm still young, you know. Still have a lot of life in front of me. I want to change things, but I don't know how to start. I wouldn't know where to begin. So, I asked Ronnie to put some names on my throat. I put my mother's name, Lois. I put my father's name, Jacob. I put Arthur's name. I put Rezzy for my child self and all that. Guess I was thinking they could hear me this way. They could hear me talking. So at night I would talk to them while lying in bed or whatever. I would talk to them and I would tell them things. Mostly that I was sorry. That I didn't want to be this way. That I wanted a different life, and that I was sorry I hurt them along the way. I talked to my dad a lot. I could feel him there on my throat, close to my voice. One night while lying in my bunk, I started talking to him and I just said it out loud. I told him. I broke the promise. I said what had been done to me all those years before. And my voice, man. I never heard my story out loud, and my voice just closed up around the story, like protecting it or something. It burned. The words were just burning. I told him that he should have known. He should have asked. I told him he should have tried harder when I was 10 years old and fighting other kids, but said nothing was wrong. He should have kept asking, kept trying. He should have made me break my promise, you know? He should have done everything he could. "Why didn't you do everything you could?" I asked him, lying there on my cot in the dark. And a week later, the mail came and I had a package. I never get mail here in prison, so it was a nice surprise. Once in a while, Mom writes and tells me how she is and tells me She's worried about me and asks if I'm eating and all that, but this package wasn't from my mom. It was from the name Fisher, somewhere in Delaware. I opened it and found a kit for a 1969 vintage original AMT Buick Wildcat modeled in yellow. There was no note, just the model car kit, but I knew it wasn't from my mom because when they divorced, she took back her maiden name, Miller, so it had to be from my pops, Jacob. Jacob Fisher. And it was from him. He had sent me a gift in prison after no contact for almost 3 years. And I thought, you know, maybe he heard me. Maybe my dad heard me in here, talking to him. So I spent the next week putting the car together. It was a beauty, man, a beauty. You should have seen how gorgeous it was. And I sent it back to him along with a letter. In the letter, I told him what had happened when I was 10. It was the hardest thing I ever wrote. And he didn't write back. Instead, he just showed up. He just came straight here. He cried. He put his hand on the glass between us. He told me he was so sorry. Said I should have told someone. And so here I am. Telling you.
2.
Caller, you are on the air.
Hi, Donald. My name's Sebastian White. Non-listener, I'm afraid. But first-time caller, so that's a plus. I've heard about your radio show, of course, but I've never listened because, well, I really can't take the liberal agenda to-do list, but I do appreciate the work you've done for survivors like myself. Anyway, I don't really know why I called in. You know who I am, of course. We don't need to razz all that. I was tagged on social media a few minutes ago by people telling me about the young man who just called into your program, and I was able to catch most of his story, and I guess I just want to speak to him directly, if you don't mind. If he's still there, Ezra, I just want to say something to you. I want to tell you how brave you are, and it's not easy to be brave, okay? This world discourages authenticity from infancy. It is not easy to do what you just did. It's not easy to just speak. or even wait to speak, for that matter. And I'll tell you something. You know, I told many people what happened to me immediately. I told the world. I wanted the universe to know. I wrote books about it. I spoke on TV. I gave countless interviews. I used my anger as a way to create action. And I told myself that she was nothing if I showed her through those actions that she didn't affect me. That I was still the proud queen that I am. Get right back up, Sebastian. Get up and blow your worst enemies a kiss. Mwah! You know? And that's how I've always survived. You know? I just learned how to make a meal out of pain. How to brand my sorrow. Well, I don't think I've ever said that out loud before. You know, I want to say to you, you know, I respect your silence. That you took the time that you needed. And I respect that. I envy that, really. I mean, I've done what I've done, and I've dealt with it the way that I did. But in the end, here I am. Here I still am, you know. It didn't help me, if I'm being honest, to write and talk about her so openly. It didn't help me to push through everything like that. But you are brave, Ezra. And listening to you today has made me think a bit about things. How vague, I know. Sebastian White thinks about things. What a terrible title for a blog. Anyway, who among us is not alone, Mr. Ellis? Which of us has forgotten her? None of us. Not one of us. So thank you. Thank you.
3. The Prospect Times Opinion, August 14th, 2026, an invocation by Donald Ellis. This is an opinion page, but what I'm here to say is not an opinion. It's an offering. It's a letting. A delayed release. An invitation to the beginning of who you are through the end of what you were. My name is Donald Ellis, and I am not a survivor of rape. I did not survive. I perished before pushing through. I had to end before I could begin again. My name is Donald Ellis, and I am not a victim of rape. I am an assault's legacy, an embassy of expirations. I am the remnant of memory, collateral debris. I am an earned epilogue. 10 years ago, I was having a beer with a friend after work, and a few hours later, I was violently assaulted and left for dead behind a dumpster. No worse, I was left for living. My assaulter wanted me to live through what I had experienced. It was a gesture of torture, a most excruciating gift. I became suicidal. I told myself I did not deserve love, my children, my wife. I was an isolation of shame, a pending avalanche. I was blood outside its body. Many times I have asked myself what I could have done to protect myself that night. I asked myself if I had deserved this. And I convinced myself that I did. And it wasn't hard to. I live in a country built on celebritizing its citizens' grief and amplifying stories of violence and assault for political gain. Click counts or television ratings. Let me be emphatically clear. They don't care about us. People who live through sexual assault are a crash on the side of the road, and the American media is nothing more than cars slowing down just long enough to take a peek. Just long enough to take a picture before speeding off to their next fatality. We are a country that capitalizes on the fetishizing of felonies. A country that says innocent until proven guilty. Even though the proving of assault is nearly impossible. Tell me how you prove coercion. How you prove the difference between being hit on and hunted. How you prove your arms were held down, your body was touched, your life was threatened, if you ever told anyone. For people who have suffered violent sexual crimes, proof, the very act of proving, is more than just a burden. It is boundless bearing, an eternity of futility. I'm not one for witchcraft, but I believe in the power of spells. In the potential of many voices speaking at once in order to finally be heard, to force change upon those who are unwilling to do the hard work to help us. So, if you were once left for living, like I was all those years ago, join me. Say it out loud with me now. I am in a body. It is not the one I came here with, but it is the one I'll leave here in. I will take care of it. It belongs to me now. My pain, I will take care of. It belongs to me now. My heart, I will take care of it. It belongs to me now. My story, I will take care of it. It belongs to me now. I experience death, but I am not a ceasing. These hands remain sorcerers. This mind contains many moons, pulling gravities. Every memory is an ocean, every remembrance a tide. I have the right to recede. I have the right to swell. And though I am estranged from the sun, I am brightness lit from within. With this voice, I cast out the shadows. My forced curse, my executioner's oath, I cast out the crime of me, my casualty. Silence. You must leave. Sadness. Go. Surrender. Shame. Cruelty. Quiet now. Only light now. Flare now. Glow now. Radiance now. Beam now. Blaze now. Spark now. Gleam now. Grow now. I stand with you as you stand with me. A mending before us and between us. This body is my own. It belongs to me now. My pain, I will take care of it. It belongs to me now. My heart, I will take care of it. It belongs to me now. My story, I will take care of it. It belongs to me now. Ending. Elapse. Beginning. Come.
Part 10. 1. Edward Dispatch. Hi, Maud. My name is Edward Altman, and I'm a reporter for the Dispatch newspaper. A former journalist for the Dispatch by the name of Joshua Greenfield reached out to you for comment almost a decade ago. And while he no longer works for the paper, I wanted to circle back now that so much time has passed and see if you would like to give us a statement or comment regarding the recent allegations of Ezra Fisher, who recently came forward with a physical description of you, which has, of course, reopened the case. Is there anything you'd like to share with the public, Maud? Maud is offline. Maud is now online.
Yes. Look closer.
Oh, you're here. You responded. Hi. Hello. Look closer to what?
Use your imagination.
What am I looking at? What am I supposed to be seeing, Maud? Sorry, but can you...
What isn't she? What space does she hold? What do you think of her? To whom does she belong? What does she deserve? What has she earned?
I'm sorry, I don't know what you mean. Can I ask you some questions?
Shut the fuck up, I'm talking.
Okay. Okay, I'm listening.
I'm going to tell you some secrets. You like secrets, don't you, Edward?
Yes. I like information pertaining to secrets.
I thought I told you to shut the fuck up, sweetheart.
Yes. Quiet now.
Good boy. I have some questions for you, Edward.
Should I answer them?
No. You should think about them. What color is she? Is she a mirror? Are you in her, looking at another figure? What could be better about her? Why are her arms shaped like that? Do her arms remind you of your mother? Do your mother's arms remind you of a daughter? What do you want to do to her? If you could do anything you wanted to, what would you do? Play with her? Penalize her? Hit her? Rape her? Beat her? Cry on her? Come on her? Take her body away from her? Cut off her hair? Give her to your father. Give her to the government. Close her legs. Close her lungs. Burn her in public. Take away her children. Take away her abortion. Give her a miscarriage. Give her life. Would you cut off her clitoris? Cut off the parts of her face that don't match? Ask her to cut off the parts of her face you don't like? Cut out her carbohydrates? Inject her with something? Make her listen to something? Explain something to her? Show her how something is done? Indoctrinate her? Teach her? Fuck her? Make her white instead of brown? Make her black instead of yellow? Make her yellow instead of red? Make her eat her own red? Never let her talk about her blood in front of you? Does crying make you uncomfortable? Does talking make you uncomfortable? Does looking into eyes make you uncomfortable? Would you live with her? Share a house with her? Give her your last name? Treat her with respect? Cheat on her? Cheat on her with someone younger? Someone's daughter? Would that not bother you? Lie to her. Curse at her. Call her good girl. Call her monster. Is she dishonest? Deceitful? Is she violent? Are you surprised? Can you trust her? What if you can't trust her? How will you feel if you can't trust her? How will you behave if you can't trust her? What will you do if you can't trust her? What does it say about you that she can't be trusted? Is she awful? Is she awe-filled? Can she do it all? Does she have it all? Is she not good enough? Is she a coward? Is she beautiful? Can you have her? What if you can't have her? How will you feel if you can't have her? How will you behave if you can't have her? What will you do if you can't have her? What does it say about you that she can't be had? Will you make her pay? Will there be consequences? Will there be a punishment? Will you let it slide? What if she's ugly, but you need to fuck? What if she smells, but you need to fuck? What if she's gay, but you need to fuck? What if she changes her mind, but you need to fuck? What if she's a child, but you need to fuck? What if she's your child, but you need to fuck? What if she's in pain, but you need to fuck? What if you're married, but you need to fuck? What if she lets people die? What if she likes war? What if she's ungrateful and unkind about it? What if she asked for it? What if she runs for president? How would you feel if she did the same things to you? What if she wanted to play with you, penalize you, hit you, rape you, beat you, cry on you, come on you, take your body away from you, cut off your hair, give you to her father, give you to the government, close your legs, close your lungs, burn you in public, take away your children, take away your semen, give you life? Would she cut off your penis, cut off the parts of your face that don't match, ask you to cut off the parts of your face she doesn't like, cut out your carbohydrates, inject you with something, make you listen to something, explain something to you, show you how something is done, indoctrinate you, teach you, fuck you, make you white instead of brown, make you black instead of yellow, make you yellow instead of red, make you eat her red, never let you talk about blood in front of her? Does crying make you uncomfortable? Does talking make you uncomfortable? Does looking into eyes make you uncomfortable? Would she live with you? Share a house with you? Give you her last name? Treat you with respect? Cheat on you? Cheat on you with someone younger? Someone's son? Would that not bother her? Lie to you? Curse at you? Call you good boy? Call you monster? Are you dishonest? Deceitful? Are you violent? Are you surprised? Can she trust him? What if she can't trust him? How will she feel if she can't trust him? How will she behave if she can't trust him? What will she do if she can't trust him? What does it say about her that he can't be trusted? Are you awful? Are you awe-filled? Can you do it all? Do you have it all? Are you not good enough? Are you a coward? Is he beautiful? Can she have him? What if she can't have him? How will she feel if she can't have him? How will she behave if she can't have him? What will she do if she can't have him? What does it say about you that he can't be had? Will you make him pay? Will there be consequences? Will there be a punishment? Will you let it slide? What if he's ugly but you need to fuck? What if he smells but you need to fuck? What if he's gay, but you need to fuck? What if he changes his mind, but you need to fuck? What if he's a child, but you need to fuck? What if he's your child, but you need to fuck? What if he's in pain, but you need to fuck? What if he's married, but you need to fuck? What if he lets people die? What if he likes war? What if he's ungrateful and unkind about it? What if he asked for it? What if he runs for president?
Maud has left the chat. Maud is offline.
Part 11. The sky above is disfigured with color as I reach the top of the subway stairs, where a homeless man asks me for change. His dog tied to a pole by a handkerchief. Poor dog. I have money on me, but I'd rather keep it. I don't mind his suffering. I prefer it. It's nice to be back after so much traveling abroad. Maybe I'll walk a while and enjoy the crowded streets near Times Square and the billboards covered in the ghoulish portraits of television's women. I'm in no hurry. I've got nowhere in particular to be. The fall is easing in, and everyone's traded cardigans for coats. This is my favorite time of year, when everything begins to die without choice. When the Great Mother begins her grand death sentencing. But I am the greatest mother of all. And while I'm not a murderess, I do love a good ending to a man's mind, especially if I've written it. It's not revenge. It's not payback. Nothing was done to me. It's just something I like to do now and again. I'll make my way north up Broadway toward Central Park. I've heard the benches are always filled with curious people. I've heard trees don't cast shadows there anymore because the sun sets first over the buildings that surround them. I think that was in a poem I read once. When I get there, I'll ask someone if it's true. Any man will do. This is Amber Tamblyn. This production of Any Man, a Novel, presented by Harper Perennial and Harper Audio, was directed and executive produced by the amazing Suzanne Franco Mitchell. It was recorded and produced by CDM Sound Studios in New York City, with additional recordings at Little Everywhere in Glendale, California, 48 Windows in Santa Monica, California, and the media staff in Los Angeles, California. Text copyright 2018 by Amber Tamblyn. Production copyright 2018 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening. Thank you for fighting.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.